Hello and welcome to Saladcast. We're back again. We weren't sure when we were going to come back, but I think it's fair to say Saturday has triggered us back into action. So back again, the four of us again. So welcome on the podcast, Dan. You're drinking something dark?
I am indeed, Ollie. Yeah, I've come prepared. I mean, I brought an Australian friend.
It's about the wine he's holding up to the camera.
Yeah, and there's about half a bottle of red wine there. And so I'm going to say that the big question is how much of it will be left.
Is half of that bottle of wine in your system or shared between you and your good
partner? No, that's shared. That's shared around the house. I'm not the only person in this room. My Chinese mother-in-law, or my mother-in-law, I've got one mother-in-law, obviously, is sitting here doing a jigsaw right next to me. So she may well be partaking in some of the wine as well. But yeah, I felt I needed some accompaniment after a challenging day at the meadow yesterday.
Was her being Chinese relevant to the story, Dan?
No, but she can't really listen, but I think I'm going to ask her what she made of the podcast afterwards. She's never heard anybody record a podcast before, so she may need wine to help her get through it too, even though she can't actually understand what I'm saying, but there we go.
I feel like the puzzle might be the most interesting bit there, let's be honest.
And welcome back on the podcast, Chris. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good, thank you, Ollie. Very good. Well, as good as we can be after this weekend, but yeah, looking forward to chewing the fat tonight.
Brilliant. And well, welcome back on the podcast, Mike. You didn't join us for the finance pod. I'd like to say maybe it's because you were doing lots of training, but you just weren't interested.
No, I'm not a numbers guy. I'm a vibes guy. We've discussed that before. So yeah, keep me out of that. It's above my pay grade. But yeah, otherwise, yeah, all I've been doing is running anyway. So yeah, this time next week, marathon will be done. So yeah, just off the top, just thank anybody that listened to this and donated to the fundraiser. It's still open if anybody wants to put any in. But yeah, really nice to see the Saladcast community come out and support. So well received, and it'll help me when I'm in the doldrums to think back to all the guys supporting anyway. And I'll try not to think too much about the town while I'm going around, because I think that might depress me and slow me down. Yeah.
Well, maybe you could listen to us for the last hour, Mike, and it will kind of spur you on thinking about Flanagan and his colleagues.
Yeah, I mean, the last hour is supposed to be the worst, so that's probably going to just make it double bad. So yeah, maybe won't do that, but maybe I'll pretend I'm running away from a town performance. That might help me have a bit more motivation. Yeah, so we'll see. Anyway, it's going to be horrendous, whatever happens, but it will be finished. That's the thing.
Yeah, so we'll retweet out the link again. So yeah, if you can donate to Mike, that would be fantastic. So this podcast, we've got four games to cover, two draws, two losses. So let's jump into it.
Graham Turner watching got in front of him. Over day. Lovely ball in. Lovely own goal. It's still there. Still alive for Harold. Harold pulls it back. What a goal!
The four games we've got to cover. We've got the Oxford draw. We have the Bristol Rovers away draw. The Pompey away defeat, and then obviously on Saturday, just gone, Shrewsbury Town lost 2-0 at home to Wickham. But Dan, you were quite keen to talk about the Oxford draw.
Okay, I wouldn't overdo that, Ollie. I didn't want to mention it. It feels like an eternity ago, doesn't it? Time sort of seems to fly by. I think it's worth remembering Oxford are a good team. They're going for the playoffs. They were very good when we played them at their place back before Christmas. And I thought the team put in a decent performance. Obviously, Jack Price scored a nice goal at the end. Good to see the local lad netting his first strike for the town. And I thought there was a degree of resilience in that performance. And I thought we actually looked to play a bit of football. And it's easy to forget that once you've saw what we saw yesterday. But two of the four performances have actually been okay. And I don't really get it, Ollie, as to why two of the four performances, even though we lost at Portsmouth, I thought we played pretty well, were good. And the other two were really not good at all. So we are a pretty schizophrenic team. And this, the four games we're talking about tonight illustrate that better than any other ones, really.
Yeah, no, I thought the Oxford game, we definitely deserved at least a draw from that one. I thought we played well and, yeah, fully deserved that Jack Price. It was a really nice strike as well. I think a lot of town fans enjoyed that one. He certainly did. It was nice to hear him speak after the game. And, yeah, it was interesting. Wasn't it? Oxford, I felt, was quite odd. There was supposed to be a promotion hunt. They started time-wasting significantly. And this shows you, doesn't it? Football's such a game played in the head. And it's a game that, yeah, I think a draw was a fair result, Chris, would you say?
I would, and I'd agree with Dan that we played well that day. And it's worth saying that on the back before that game, Oxford had won a couple, and their form since then has seen them thrash Peterborough and win some other games quite heavily as well. And from looking like they'd blown the playoffs, they're suddenly back in sixth place and looking like the favourites to get in the playoffs now of that chasing pack. So in that context, getting a draw against them was a decent result. And at that point as well, it meant we'd taken 7 points in four games, because that game came after that run of three crucial games against the teams down there with us, didn't it? And we won two of those, obviously. So we've got the 6 points from there, and then that Oxford draw. And at that point, you felt pretty safe. You know, the gap to the bottom had grown. And for the first time, I was starting to feel like maybe we could start to put relegation fears behind us and, you know, start to think about next season and how we're going to hopefully do a bit better. But sadly, since then, results and performances have left us feeling a bit more edgy again.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It does seem like a long time ago we had that Oxford game. And then obviously we went into that Bristol Rovers away game, which was a very, very dull game of football. Not the best game, would you say, Dan?
Yeah, not the best game. My goodness me. You know, next stop, sorting out the Middle East crisis for you, Ollie. It was abysmal. It was the lowest quality game of League One football I'd seen until yesterday, which for the first 70 minutes was matching. But seriously, in terms of quality, both sides had none. I mean, Aidan O'Brien at the bar from 20 yards, which woke a few people up behind the goal. But that aside, there was, you know, really little in terms of creative play, in terms of, you know, looking like either side had any got get up and go. And Bristol Rovers have been on a heinous run. And thankfully they broke that yesterday by winning away at Cheltenham. But Town also looked completely devoid of ideas. And I mean, the point wasn't the end of the world. I'll take every single point going. But as a football game, I thought it was a really depressing experience. I mean, I could turn it around, Ollie. It gave me hope that I might still make League One. Yeah, I might be 50, but I don't care. It was that bad.
Yeah, it was an appetizer, wasn't it, to Saturday, what we saw. Lack of quality has been... sometimes I'm thankful we don't do a weekly podcast, because it would have been deja vu upon deja vu upon deja vu talking about inept performances. But I think Saturday was a little different. You know, we've been debating, and Tom Griff put it quite nicely in our WhatsApp chat. He said, you know, do a podcast when there's something to talk about or if we're safe or something. And I think Saturday was definitely the trigger for that. A full-time whistle went, Mike turned to me and said, yeah, we've got to record a podcast. And the last few weeks, Mike, haven't been great. And that Portsmouth game, I'm sure you didn't really expect anything in that one.
No, not at all. And it's funny when you're sort of reviewing these games, you think back to Oxford and yeah, the performance was okay and the point on the board, good, okay. And that sort of capped off a period where we picked up a few points and played with a bit of something about us. But since then, like that Bristol Rovers game, absolutely nothing to write home about. Like nothing happened. It was so depressing. Portsmouth away we went. Dan says we played well. We got beat 3-1. I don't consider that playing well. You know, no points on the board. You know, it's not for me. We often puffed, but I don't think Portsmouth had to really get out of third gear to beat us. And then yesterday against Wickham again, it's very similar to what you guys are saying there about sort of performances and attitude and application. It's just, we're lacking in so many areas that it's actually very hard to stay interested in the games as well as a fan. So the players look bored. I think the fans are pretty bored. I think apathy is growing, and it's a concerning time, because in my mind, I think last time we did a podcast, I thought we'd probably have done enough by now. We'd have probably scraped together enough points, nicked a win from somewhere, but we're leaving ourselves in a very precarious position, and results can't keep going our way. You know, on Saturday there was a few that didn't, and I think we can't keep relying on other people to do our jobs for us a bit. So that's kind of that's my sort of takeaway feeling about those, that sort of little patch of games, is lots of opportunities to do the job and none of them taken really, even halfway convincingly, or even look like we're trying to do it. And that's my concern, that we're trending sort of downwards, I think. Yeah, Chris.
I'll leave Wickham for now, because we'll come on to that in a bit in detail, I'm sure. But I will push back on Portsmouth a little bit. I will say they were the league leaders and we gave that game a good go. We got level at 1-1. We didn't start well. I thought for the first 20 minutes they played us off the park, but somehow we played our way back into that game, got an equaliser. And if we'd got to half-time level, it could have been a different game. And we didn't because of a dodgy penalty decision. We didn't get to half-time level because a player throws himself to the ground. It's blatant to everybody watching it that he's throwing himself to the ground, apart from the referee, it seems, who awarded the penalty. They score that and it's a different game. And even second half, we came out and gave it a go. Dan Udo had a chance, as I recall. And then, unfortunately, they hit us with a good goal. They, you know, their third goal was a good quality goal. And sometimes you just have to hold your hands up. But at one point,
it's worth noting, Chris, that Shane Dunkley smashed the ball into his own net in the second minute. Now, we know how that story goes. Earlier in the season, we lose by 3 or 4 goals. And that absolutely didn't happen at Pompey, which, to be fair, Mike, just adds to the paradox. So we've shown that we have got a bit of resilience on the odd occasion, sometimes when you don't expect it, actually, which then leads you to ask, what on earth happened at Bristol Rovers and Wickham? And I don't have the answer to it, but
yeah. I think maybe
Pompey, the 90 minutes of Pompey in the round, for me, made me think, hello, you know, we've got more about us than I perhaps sometimes think.
And I don't normally
if you're a Reading fan, and if you're a Reading fan, what on earth do you make of this team? I chat to a few Reading fans, and what do they make of us? Like, they see our results, they see we haven't scored again, and then against them, we seem to turn it on. This team is, I don't know, is it fragile? Is it just?
It's an odd one because it's almost, you almost think, and maybe I'm a bit jaded from Saturday and recently, but that Portsmouth game, you know, great, we were resilient, this, that, bit of bad luck, but it's all for nothing at the end of the day. We're not going to stay up in the round. We'll stay up if we actually get points on the board. And resilience to me is, you know, not kicking the ball in your own net and not giving the referee decisions to make in the box and setting yourselves up not to get in sticky situations. And, you know, you
can bemoan that here and there,
but the other thing is, we're not creating anything. We're not creating any goal scoring chances. So we're not going to win any points. We're not going to win any games. We're not scoring goals, regardless of how many dodgy penalties go against us and stuff. I can't get on board, and I think it's because of the lack of sort of endeavour I saw on Saturday and the attitude I saw from some of the players. I can't get on board with this hard luck story. We lost 3-1. We were always going to lose to Portsmouth anyway, whether we played well or not. We've not got enough in the bank to beat them. Refereeing decisions aside, and so that's kind of that's a bit of an outlier to me, that game.
Mike, but we went to Derby and played pretty well at Derby, and we're good value for a 1-1 draw, and they're the second best team in the league. And we go to Bolton on Tuesday. I'm not saying we beat Bolton, but we might have
different phases of the season. I think different phases of the season that we were on the Hurst bounce. I think that we're kind of reverted to type a little bit over the last few weeks. I'm seeing less out of us, but yeah, I'm depressed. I'm tired from running. You know what can I say?
I hear you,
to talk about that the Pompey game. So what we're referring to there, where one of their players dived in the box. Winchester did put a foot in, but it was nowhere near touching him. Player dived and won a penalty. And at that point, it was 1-1. Shipley had scored, and you're right. You know, it could have been another Derby away point, which a point would have been quite nice, obviously on the board. But it wasn't to be. Maybe that result has rocked us a little bit. Maybe going to this game, but going into the Wickham game, it was a game that we're all looking forward to in terms of we thinking we might get something from it. Coming into the game, Wickham had played a number of games in a short period of time. They'd also lost the auto windshield or whatever you want to call it final against Peterborough. So we're thinking this is a game that we're going to be able to potentially get something from. Not that Wickham are a bad side or anything, but you know, they've got nothing to play for now. And you're thinking hopefully our players will be up for this and we'll go at it. And Paul Hurst said, you know, he made it really clear to the players how important this game was. And we started so poorly. It was almost a summary of the whole season, wasn't it? We get into decent positions. Players play ball backwards, poor touches, poor decisions. Dan, it was a summary of our season in a game.
Well, it was an odd one, really. And on a number of levels. I mean, I'll start out by saying I think that it looked to me like Shropshire was suddenly a coastal town and there was a nice beach somewhere near, because for the first hour of that game, all 22 players gave this vibe of being on the beach. And I think the most important thing to remember is Wickham were no better than us. In fact, there's a case, you know, Taylor Perry had a one-on-one with the keeper, it was ultimately offside, but we were creating the better chances. Not many of them. It wasn't, you know, total football. But until one critical juncture, which we'll get on into a moment, I'm sure, there was nothing in that game. It had 0-0 all over it. and it was just a question of staying awake. So both teams were every bit as bad. I mean, Sam Vokes played international football. Did anyone even realise he was on the pitch? You know, I felt that both teams were absolutely abysmal. And what I would say is that I get why Town, why we can be critical of this. Why is there not more speed in the passing? Why is there not more urgency? And that's what Paul Hurst was going on about. But let's not forget the context of the game. Wickham were no better than us. We were not being outclassed. Both teams looked like they were already thinking about Barbados. And I don't get that. But I also think we need to remember that the key critical juncture, Flanagan's red card, changes everything.
But before we get to the red card, going back to what you're saying there, both teams are on the beach, but one team is allowed to look like they're on the beach because they've secured safety. They're not going up. They're not in the mix. Their kind of season's done for Wickham. They are where they are. So they can phone in their performances for the rest of the season. They might finish one place higher, two places, or whatever. It doesn't matter. We're not at that position. We are in the shit. We should be tooth and nail in that game. And we throw in a performance like there's nothing riding on it. There's no energy. There's no drive. There's no, like you say, speed of passing. It's really hard to put a finger on. But they look.
Some of those players in the Town shirt were hopeless. Right, Tom Bayliss. Yeah. I don't know what's got into him. He couldn't trap a medicine ball, and he's apparently going to be one of our bigger earners. He's one of our better players. He was abysmal. He wasn't not trying. I don't think. I just think he's lacking it in confidence in every single way, and it affects it because of where he plays in the team. Dan Addo, I thought he was a bit better than he had been in some of his poor performances, but he's not the Dan Addo you want to see. Chris?
Well, you mentioned Tom Bayliss then, Dan. You made a comment earlier that you felt like you could still have a League One career based on what you'd seen in one of those games. I would rather have had you out there than Tom Bayliss. Against
not up front, mate. I was talking about right back. But yeah.
What I'd have got from you, Dan, is effort and somebody who showed a bit of pride in a Shrewsbury Town shirt. And Tom Bayliss, I don't normally say this about our players. I don't like calling it out, but he wound me up. I felt like he was not playing for our shirt on Saturday. I felt like he was a player who thought, I'm not here last year and next year, and I don't really care. I might be doing him a disservice. That might be totally wrong, but that's what his performance looked like to me. He gave the ball away so many times, but what annoyed me was, never mind the mistakes, it was the lack of effort after the mistake to put it right, to get back, to win the ball back again. He just strolled back almost looking like he's going to shrug his shoulders. He looked to me like he didn't care. And I don't believe footballers don't care most of the time. But he really wound me up because he's got so much ability. He's shown it so many times. And against Wickham, I've never seen a player look as lazy in a Shrewsbury shirt, or at least I can't remember an example in a long time. It was like watching Sam Cosgrove again in terms of effort.
And that's the thing, you know, you look at the game, you're getting frustrated. It was poor effort, poor execution, poor effort. Everything was quite poor. You know, you're trying to find reasons. I thought there was a good tweet from Pooley Shrew saying that, you know, almost it looked like players have got new deals on tables, keeping themselves injury free, which certainly looked like that from a number of players. Not maybe Flanagan; he wasn't so worried about injury in terms of his lunge. But it was an inept performance. It was gutless. It was unprofessional, and it showed of a bunch of players that. I almost didn't want to say this until like we kind of finished the season, but can't wait to see the back of most of them. Unfortunately, some of them will be here next season. I think some of the ones that were trying maybe are the ones that are going to be here, but some of them probably even contracts have got next season look like they didn't really care. And I've never felt...
See, I don't really buy that, Ollie. I take Chris's point. Bayliss had a really poor day. I don't think he was not trying, Chris. I just think he was a million miles away from where he needs to be effective in that role. He can't control a football at the moment. But
well, that's the thing. There are so many players are out of form. Like that is a crux. There is something. The team stinks.
I wonder what the dressing room's like. I think as a group, I suggest. I mean, I've got no idea if this is true, but I suggest that there's going to be identity issues in there, and I think players probably are thinking about next.
It's probably
year.
Cliques, isn't there? He's probably got the cultural clique. You've got the kind of the project clique.
We don't.
And then a few others, but yeah, you're just trying to think what's going on. And
but my thing is that even then, they've got three games where every game's professional football and makes a difference potentially, and that's really going to be true if you think you're going to be somewhere else next year.
If some of these players haven't got deals yet, I'd like to think that some of these players are going to get a little bit less on these performances because they're not performing well at all. And you talk about basics. These are professional footballers, and some of the control, the missed passing, the decisions, not the whole team. There were still some players in that team I thought had okay games. but it was an incredibly frustrating watch.
I have to say as well, the wind was bad yesterday. I mean, I'm not going to find excuses for the team, but I don't remember it being as bad for quite a long time as it was yesterday. And both teams are really struggling with the swirling ball. I mean, Srahar was a good example when he came on. It was, you know, a number of times he was sort of turning, running back, and the ball swirling above his head. And I don't really remember it being like that too frequently. But I mean, you know, another factor that contributed to a horrible game of football, and it really was, let's be clear about it, as a game of football. I mean, gee whiz, selling that to someone who's never seen League One football before, best of luck.
They were error-ridden, weren't they? The number of times Wickham gave away the ball, gifted it to us, often in dangerous positions, and it was so frustrating to watch us fail to capitalise. Two or three times, we found ourselves 3-on-2 after they've basically gifted the ball to us, and it Bayliss or somebody else would give it away straight away again. And Tom Bloxham, I think, was the other offender for that a couple of times. And that was just driving me nuts as well, because it felt to me like they were almost trying to gift us an opportunity to score, and we just didn't want to take it. You know, it was
Bloxham. I mean, Tom, I love you if you're listening, but you don't need to see that game back. My goodness me. I'm not sure he controlled the ball once in the old game. Again, not for the lack of effort, but it just was not happening. Just a different planet.
It's a completely misjointed team, completely misjointed performance. And it was, incredibly frustrating to watch. And you talked about Vokes. It's interesting because there was some performances that I thought Feeney and Benning did okay. And Winchester midfielder doesn't do too bad. I'd say Perry was trying. I don't think he's necessarily the most gifted footballer in the squad at the moment. He could improve, but he was certainly trying and putting an effort. But interesting, we talk about obviously Flanagan got sent off, and that was a key moment in the game. Up to that point, he'd been one of the best players on the pitch, which is really even more frustrating. I think the frustration of this game is it was an opportunity to win, to, you know, 3 points now, especially looking at the results, that would have pretty much made us safe. So we came into it to a game that we thought we had a chance. We thought that Wickham might be off the pace. They were off the pace. And then Flanagan comes in, who has a really good game. He had Vokes in his pocket. Him and Dunkley were managing Vokes really well. Flanagan was doing his thing where he likes to drive forward and drive some attacks. He was playing really, really well. And then for some reason, he goes through the middle of the park. The referee should have probably blown up, but he didn't. And then he lunges. And I don't know, guys,
He did, Ollie. He did. Remember how the game we started? We got the free kick. He gave a free kick to Flanagan.
Yeah, I know. I know he did. But why didn't he blow it earlier? That would have saved us. But as soon as he did that lunge, I thought he was off straight away. I don't know what you guys thought.
Straight away. It was one of the thickest things I've ever seen on a football pitch. He's miles away from the ball. He doesn't get anywhere near it. He clatters the guy. Everybody can see it. The big sort of intake of breath when he goes in for that big lunge. He's just, everybody could see it. And everybody around me just sort of sat back in the chairs. Well, we're buggered here. Because at 11 versus 11, we were comfortable. They were half asleep. All we needed to do was create one chance, nick one. And we'd have had, it was a totally nickable game, low on quality, but like, they weren't pushing this Wickham, were they? And as soon as he went off, we just went, well, fuck this, we're 2-3-0 here, you know, because you could just see we're terrible 10 against 11. We've had it a few times this season and we always completely capitulate. We're not one of those teams with the dog in us that we'll band together and really go after it with 10 and it's just not there. So, yeah, that was that. We may as well all have got up and gone home when he went off, to be honest with you. That's how I felt. What do you reckon, Chris?
Well, Flanagan likes, doesn't he, to do those driving runs forward out of defence now and again. And it was one of those where he was, you know, he was almost playing like a midfielder, driving through the field. He had a heavy touch, didn't he? Just after he'd been fouled, actually. He's got a heavy touch and he's lost possession of the ball. Now, if he's got a brain, you know, I don't know what was going on in his hippocampus, as it were, but if you've got a brain, he pulls back a little bit and just, you know, accepts that he's made a mistake. Instead, his desperation, it seems, to get the ball back, he lunges in like that. And I think it was like Ollie said just now, the moment it happened, I turned to my son and I said, that's a red card. And he looked at me, he goes, is it? I said, it's going to be a red card. He's going to go. And, you know, the ref, to give him his credit, gave himself some time to think about it. It's not like he flashed it straight away. He thought about what he'd seen and he showed the red card. And you can't complain. You just can't. It was a blatant red card.
Yeah, and the part of the match that was in, the part of the pitch that was in, it was so unnecessary. He wasn't a last ditch tackle, professional tackle to stop a goal. There wasn't any needle in it. It wasn't somebody that had done him over or one of his mates over previously in the game. It was completely pointless. And that was the most frustrating thing. You know, we'd been comfortable and he just chucks it away. Absolutely throws it down the drain. And with that, then you start going, right, today was an opportunity for us to get three, if not one. Then you look at the next few games, you think, right, that's really knackered us here because the opportunities for points are dwindling after that. That was an important game to try and get something out of. And Christ on a bike, it's just idiotic, isn't it, really?
I felt it was our best chance. That was the game I thought we had to win.
I should say there are a few people in Block 11 who were absolutely convinced at the time the referee was a raving lunatic and hated Shrewsbury like every single referee who ever referee Shrewsbury Town. I was fascinated. I thought, really?
No,
you really think it was like unbelievable. And
right, to be honest.
Second?
I thought the referee was all right.
He was fine.
He's certainly one of the better referees. I'm not saying there's a high bar, but the referee...
my point was more right. There's two or three folks sitting around me who have got no idea about anything. And I thought it was fascinating. They were still defending Flanagan, blah, blah, blah. No, but
it was a clear red any day the week.
Yeah. But the thing again is, why are we so bad, Mikey, on this, when things go against us? There are teams who revel in having 10 men almost. They set themselves up and they play on the counter. We did nothing of the sort, and I bet Hurst is fuming about that. We looked as if we were just literally waiting for the end and hoping that somehow it was 0-0 there, which is, we can do better than that. We're not playing Brazil 1970.
When did Shipley get sent off? We did the same thing when he got sent off in the season. Completely rolled over. Nothing.
That was after half an hour, though, Mike. This time there was 20 minutes to go, and I was in my brain thinking, it's only 20 minutes. Can we hold out for 20 minutes? But I was sitting there thinking, I bet we can't. And sure enough,
no, it was really, really poor. And like you say, it was an opportunity. 3 points would have put us in a very, very good position. And for me, that was watching us perform on Saturday was a team that almost deserves to get relegated. We've been that bad. I think, as you said, Chris, we've scored 31 goals this season.
Yeah, 31 league goals so far this season. We've played 43 league games now. I mean, you think about that, it's an incredible stat, isn't it? And 3 games to go. Even if we scored a goal a game, we're going to be on 34, which is so by a long, long distance our lowest ever tally as a Football League club. I mean, it's bonkers.
Yeah, it is really, really poor. I was going to work it out how many games we've had where we haven't. Oh, unfortunately, the filter doesn't work. But yeah, we've had a lot of games where we haven't scored. Not in terms of like, it's interesting, isn't it? I think obviously Paul Hurst is not really getting any flack for this. I think that's probably fair. But obviously, it's going to have some accountability for results. For me, just looking back a little bit, this team has looked disjointed and poor since the start, going back to the summer. And where we are now is, for me, a hangover and shadow from the summer. I don't think we've looked right all season. We haven't had back-to-back wins, have we? I think that was in your ranty thread, Chris, as well. we haven't had back-to-back wins all season. And for me, it's just another inept performance, which just summarises the entire season. And yeah, the circumstances, the opportunity and the circumstances led to fans being incredibly pissed off. And I thought it was interesting to see our captain was online a little bit more on Twitter on Saturday night. And yeah, those interviews, I thought, Mike, were quite interesting.
Yeah, I was more interested in the, usually for a podcast, I'll go back and watch the highlights. Not bothered. I know I saw enough on Saturday, but I did go back and watch the post-match interviews that they put up on the Twitter feed. Dunkley and Hurst on media duties, and Hurst, he watched his first, and the worry is going into those last three games when we need to pull some performances out, get some team together, you know, get some drive in the team. Hurst comes out and he says it's lackluster and lacking in quality, no quality to our play, and he admitted, much like the fans thought, it was a very, very hard watch. Now, one of the things I did pick up on there is he said to the press guy that the instruction to the players is to pass the ball forwards, not to pass it sideways and backwards. He was as frustrated as the fans that there's a lot of sideways, slow, you know, look up, turn around, knock it back to Marco. That's not what Paul Hurst is trying to get the team to do. He wants the team to play forward, play fast, probably play on the counter. That got me thinking back to when my lad was a mascot and I was sat behind Matt Taylor. Now, Matt Taylor was not a tactical genius. Matt Taylor was not a good manager. That's borne out by what's happened this season. But I can remember him absolutely doing his top that the players weren't playing the ball forward. He was just screaming, pass it forward, get it forward. And so have we got a group of players that just won't do what they're told? Are there players in there with big egos that think they know best? Is, you know, there's something about what Dan's saying about the sort of the makeup of the squad and the sort of the personalities in there. And, you know, it's a very simple thing to get players to pass the ball up the line. You know, in his interview, Hurst said one of the only good things we did was Feeney knocked a very simple ball up the channel, Bloxham got on it, cut inside, sort of fumbled around and created an opportunity. Simply knocking a ball at the channel is not a difficult thing to get a team to do. If you knock it across to your full-back, bang it up the channel. Dan Udo should be running more channels than he does. He's too much in the middle of the pitch. He doesn't look half-assed. So you've got Bloxham or Shipley trying to get on the ball and get it in. It's not rocket science, and they're just not doing it. And they seem to be instructed to do it. So what's going on?
22 games we haven't scored.
There you go.
22 games we have not scored.
So we're trying not to.
Well, I just don't think there's any belief at all. You know, there's one moment in the game where the crowd really booed and really got quite animated when Bayliss got the ball. He's, you know, he would say he's one of our most gifted players. There was an opportunity, I think, if I remember right, he could have passed it out left to either Benning or to Shipley, and he passed it back to a centre half. And that just summed up that this team. There's no confidence. They don't believe in each other.
But also they don't believe in themselves to take responsibility. You know, a player who, you know, who's going to stand up and be counted will get that ball and will go on the half turn and try and make something happen. They're all passing it to somebody else.
Something. So I think Benning is trying to do that. I'd say Shipley and Winchester were quite frustrated, Dan. But it was just, you need a team at League One level to perform and to at least have a go. And yeah, we don't look like a team that has any confidence in each other's ability to
that last one's the key one, Ollie, confidence, because you see it all levels of football, right? It's all right saying pass the ball to forward or pass the ball to big Clint in the same coloured shirt, but if you haven't got the belief that you're able to do it, then things just won't happen. And so I don't mind going left and right to an extent. I quite like keeping the ball, but there's no faith that we can do that either. There's Winchester wants the ball, he looks up, he doesn't know where to give it. Perry wants the ball, you know, he runs with it reasonably well, but he hasn't got the confidence to make these passes either. And of course, Bayliss being in the form that he's in, if you give it to him on one pivotal player when you move forward and he's not going to do anything with it, then everything just keeps running against the buffers, and confidence is inevitably going to take a massive hit. And that's what we saw yesterday. People have got no faith in passing the ball to their colleagues, and they've got no faith in their own ability to do anything with it. And that's a hard thing to turn around, no matter who you are.
Yeah, if the ball goes up to Dan Udo, it just bounces off him at the moment. He's not in confidence, Chris.
Yeah, I think we talked about the manager asking them to pass forwards. The leader on the pitch is the captain, obviously. And I've defended Shea Dunkley on this podcast many times. I love the guy, but he's one of the most guilty for me of sideways and backwards passing. And the number of times Marco Morosi plays the ball out to Dunkley. Dunkley taps it sideways to Feeney. Feeney plays it back to him. Dunkley stands there halfway in his own half with his foot on the ball, literally not moving. And he's looking around, thinking what to do. Can't see anything and plays it back to Morosi again. And we're back to where we were a minute earlier. And that's cause and effect, though, isn't it?
It's because there isn't anyone making any runs.
It's just frustrating to watch, though, isn't it? That, and I know, you know, it's good to hold the ball, and you can't always, you know, I don't want to see them always playing long or whatever. I totally get that. You know, any side that's comfortable on the ball will sometimes go sideways, but we seem to go sideways and backwards and then give it away. You know, it's the forward bit never comes, and it was a painful watch. It was painful on Saturday, and it's been painful in recent weeks. You know, we made progress when Hurst first came in, but I think someone else said earlier in this podcast, it's like we've lost the honeymoon period now, and it's gone back to where we were, frankly, and it's not much different to what we were seeing under Matt Taylor. And I still have faith in Paul Hurst, but I think he needs a chance this summer to bring his own players in, clearly, because the players he's got that aren't suiting the way he wants to play, or they're not doing it at the moment and we're not seeing it.
Yeah, it's interesting that point about Dunkley. You say, you know, I was going mad, he's standing there looking up, because there's nobody in the midfield is showing in a space to receive the ball. All the guys that are sort of asking for it have got a man right up their arse, so they're just going to get it taken off them, or they're going to end up in a bit of trouble. And all the people up the pitch, they're not, like Dolly says, they're not making the runs. So the poor guys at the back are damned if they do and damned if they don't. If they try and play football sideways and keep the ball, people are moaning at them to kick it long. If they kick it long, it comes straight back. It's painful for them. Like, I don't know what they're supposed to do. And this isn't a defence of Dunkley. I think he's been terrible for the last three or four games. He's, you know, the own goal is symptomatic of what he's up to at the moment. You know, and it's just that the people are hiding, the people on the pitch are hiding, the players are hiding, they're not offering for the ball, they're not making the runs, they're not putting the effort in, and it stitches up the guys at the back because they can't defend for 90 minutes. It's a tough game when the ball doesn't stick with Udo, the ball isn't getting taken into channels, the ball is never in the opposition half, basically. It's a tough game to play for them.
Yeah, I think there's something in that, Mike. I mean, I mentioned to you guys last night in a couple of sort of semi-ranty WhatsApp messages that I found it quite interesting watching Flanagan and Dunkley in possession of the ball. And I sit in block 11, so I'm just to the left of the goal in the south stand. And when Flanagan's got the ball as the left of our two centre-halves and he's, you know, playing towards the away end, I'm right behind him, right? And I can see the patterns in his mind. And he's much more effective there because he's a better footballer than Dunkley. And I could see, you know, bending out to the left as an option. He's sometimes got Winchester to play in short. He's got a longer ball to Ado. He's even got a channel ball to Ado, which he played a couple of times, actually, quite nicely on Saturday. Now, this is because Flanagan, he's nuts, right, in terms of the tackling he makes. He's an idiot because he's not going to play at a higher level if he's getting sent off like he did yesterday. And it's not the first time he's done it, but I can see the patterns, right? And we're much better when Flanagan's on the ball. Now, when we played against Oxford, they made damn sure that Dunkley was the one who got the ball. And that's because they know that Dunkley, he used to play for him, I guess, or somebody's done a bit of research, they know he's not as good there. That's not his forte. He's edit, kick it, centre-half, and he's got a degree of ability there. But I thought it was interesting that Flanagan had more of the ball in that first half. And if anything was going to happen, it was because Flanagan had the ability to pick the right pass or stride forward and help create stuff. And that type of centre-half is really pivotal in any team being able to have a bit more confidence on the ball. It's just a shame when they get sent off and they're never going to play for us again this year or even ever because he lets himself down in situations like that. But we need better footballers at the back. Swaha can play. Flanagan can play. Dunkley can't play. Now, in defence of Dunkley, I think in a three, we got a better chance of him doing well there because you can tell him just pass it to the left centre-half, the right centre-half and win the headers. And I think that's where he might come into his own. I'm not advocating for it, but in a four, I just think we're not going to have the type of distribution from the back that we want, regardless of what movement's in front of him, really. Maybe that's a conversation for the summer. But I just think Flanagan lets himself down because he can do it. And then he just goes nuts and things like that tackle.
So before we move on, just going back to the Hurst interview, I was wondering what you guys think of his approach in this post-match interview. Because I've seen online a few people are sort of saying it's a bit of a throw your guys under the bus interview. You know, he's calling out the players. He's making very pointed things like, you know, lack of quality, no quality, lackluster, lacking quality. You know, he's really pointing the direction of the performance being the problem, the players being the problem. Now, one could say that might be quite motivating for the players to sort of prove him wrong or galvanize them to sort of realize that they are quality and they should start proving it. Or there's a school of thought that says he might lose the dressing room for the last three games. It's going to be real hard work. I don't know where I sit on that. I think Paul is quite a savvy character. And I think he probably knows the group well enough to think it might be motivating. But do you guys have any worries about his approach in that, the effect it might have, Chris? You know, the media hat on, how that's sometimes seen?
I would suggest if he was naming names and calling individuals out, I might have some concerns. But given the way he did it, I would defend him on two fronts. One, I would say he's talking collectively, so I don't think any individual can feel picked on. He's criticising performances as a whole. And secondly, I think sometimes we tend to exaggerate how important a radio interview is. Surely what is more important is what he is saying in his changing room to his own players directly. They don't need to listen to him on the radio like we do. They can hear it firsthand. And he's done that having just spent 20 minutes with them in the changing room. What he said,
and they might not even listen to it, to be honest.
Yeah. So to me, if he's got a problem with an individual, I'm sure face-to-face he's telling them. And if he's got a problem with them as a team, I'm sure face-to-face he's telling them as well. So I don't think anything they hear on the radio is going to be a huge surprise. You know, you get interviews like Troy Deeney when he was at Forest Green, when he comes out and publicly slates his individual players in really personal and almost offensive way. Now that's a different thing. I can see how that would shock a player to be called out publicly like that. But I don't think a manager going on radio saying a performance wasn't good enough is going to shock a player because one, he'll have already said it to them, and two, well, what do they expect him to say after that performance? So to me, I don't see the issue and I have no concerns about it. In fact, you know, it's nice. Again, I think we said it on the last podcast, or I've said it maybe on social media in some of the games recently. It's nice to actually feel the managers watch the same game as me, because that always didn't always feel the case under Matt Taylor. He would sometimes come out after a pretty poor performance and somehow find a way to present it as though we'd actually played good, some good stuff. And it didn't seem that way. And that kind of alienated him with some people. You know, he was a nice guy, but people just thought, you know, he's not on the same planet as us. Well, you can't say that about Paul Hurst. So I've no issue with it. And yeah, I'm glad he said it. And I hope at some point he gets a reaction from it. But yeah.
Also, can any of the players, do you think they really would be there thinking he's got that wrong?
No.
Tell you what, I was all right to think. I don't know any of them as individuals, but I'm pretty sure they realised that it was crap.
Yeah, I think it was crap. You saw there was an interesting one. Someone who's a friend of the pod has always wanted to say something to Dunkley, because he always seems to have a big love in for Wigan and a club in Sheffield, rather than maybe focusing on Shrewsbury. I'm not sure his past allegiances impact his performance on the pitch, but I can see why it's a little bit frustrating for fans to see their captain having little lovely chats with opposition fans, Dan.
Yeah, I'm very, very sanguine about that. I thought Luke Lee, his performance was strong on Saturday. I like seeing him at left back, actually. I always think we forgot.
He's a better left back, to be honest.
Yeah, he's good. But also, at the end, I can't think anybody would hold anything against him when he's walking around a pitch clapping everybody.
No, the only thing I didn't, and I did do that cheeky post tweet, and I did get some comments for it this weekend. You know, if you're going to give it out, you're going to get it back. And it doesn't bother me at all. That when he did that photo with him and Phillips, I thought that was a little bit classless when he signed for Wickham. But other than that, I thought the fact that he apparently went to talk to the media staff or the staff at Shrewsbury as well, and then the fact he didn't just do the clap at the end, he did the clap with on the outside of the pitch, around the pitch, really close to the fans, and that shows me that his conscience is clear. He left, and he seems like a nice bloke, and yeah, good luck to him. I thought it was quite nice. And
when he scored as well, you saw,
yeah, he stopped it straight
away. When he scored, his arms went up, and then he stopped himself. And some of his own teammates were trying to lift his arms into the air, and he was having none of it. And I know it's the cliche not to celebrate against your former team, but actually,
he was our captain, I like it as well.
I respected him for that. I liked it. It was a good goal.
I don't really care about that, Chris.
I don't really care.
He scored a goal. That's fine. As long as you don't sort of run in front of the fans and like stick your teeth.
He did run in front of Bristol Rovers fans, but I guess maybe they gave him a bit of
different
chip.
Relationship.
If they do celebrate, Dan, I'm not the type who's going to get upset about it. But I'm just saying, at the same time, I did like the way that Luke Leahy did it. I liked the way he didn't celebrate. It just felt classy. You couldn't help but like the guy for it. And, you know, he's a top bloke, and he's a big loss to us. And we saw that again, because on a day when both teams were pretty poor, he was one of the few players who could walk off that pitch and think, actually, I did all right today. And in fact,
I tell you what did annoy me about him scoring is that it came from a free kick down in the corner, which they took and tried to play it to Luke Leahy, who was unmarked on the edge of the box. And the referee called it back. And then we didn't pick up on that. And they did it again. And he scored. How had nobody worked out to go and close him down at the time?
It was numbers. But for me, I'd rather leave a man just have free one in a crowded box.
Yeah.
And have someone on the edge. Because there was two players on the edge as well. But it was frustrating. In terms of what post-match did, because obviously Shea Dunkley did a post-match. Did he have
I thought it was worth quickly touching on that, because Dunkley was very much talking about looking at the next three games. That was his big message, you know, with the big, they've been talking up there, he said, about the next three games. He was very clear, we've got to fight for our League One status, and it's still in our hands. But he said, how many times have we said that this season already? So he's saying the right things, and it sounds like they get it, but we're just not seeing it on the pitch. And I think he can come out and say it in the press, but we've got to see something in the next few games. And we'll probably get on to talk about those in a minute. But I just think, you know, don't come out and tell me that if I'm going to see another awful performance when I go to Charlton. You know, we need to see these guys putting some bloody effort in. At the very least, you know, I get a bit fed up with the Man United fans who slate Marcus Rashford because he doesn't run around. But it's your basic requirement of a relegation scrap, isn't it? Run around a bit, guys. Throw yourselves some tackles. Get that ball moving. Get it forward. And, you know, Shay, you're the leader out there. So you said it's in our hands. You said you're going to fight. Let's see it. And that's what I think.
And I think we are damn lucky that the other teams in the relegation fight below us are having a bit of a shocker. So we've got Port Vale, who in the last four results have lost three and drawn one. Cheltenham have lost the last four. And Burton Albion won on Saturday against Stevenage. Drew one, lost two. I tell you what, we maybe owe Exeter fans a beer because Cheltenham were winning, and then they lost against Exeter in the end.
And then Port Vale. Port Vale were 2-0 up against them on Saturday and lost 4-2 to Exeter.
Yeah. So we are very, very, very lucky, I think, that the teams below us are on a really bad run of form. Because those few little draw 1 points we picked up have helped us keep that gap. I'm going to the next few games, Dan. It could be that maybe we don't do anything, but we still can survive. But it's a real on a knife edge.
Yeah, I mean, they also said the 50 points keeps you upright. And I've been working on that basis all the way through the season. But there are definitely previous seasons where we'd have needed more points to stay up than we're going to need this year, right? And I'm looking at the National League this year, actually. Someone's going to go down possibly with 52, 53 points there, because Boreham Wood are already in the bottom four with 50 points. She's got two games left. Whereas we're not going to need 50 points to stay up. We could stay up with 46, Ollie. We could lose all three games, and there's no guarantee that the teams around us are going to get enough points out of their last three games either. I mean, having said that, we've got a degree of unpredictability. Those last four games that we talked about, we've had two reasonably good performances and two absolutely horrific performances. So will the real Shrewsbury Town please stand up? Now, I think I do actually know what the real Shrewsbury Town is, but that doesn't mean we can't, on occasion, come up with some points. So I've got a feeling we will skank something somewhere and we're going to stay up. I think we could stay up with 46, to be brutally honest, but I really wouldn't mind Bolton surprising us, or Charlton, a team who are still in our third of the table, proving a profitable away day, because I don't want to go into that last game against Leighton Orient still mathematically with a chance of going down, because I'm not sure my heart can take it.
Yeah, that would be at least we're at home, maybe, but Paul Hurst's record at home has been quite poor.
Yeah, I'm not sure that is a plus. I think the next two away games might help us, actually.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, the fixtures are, we've got Bolton on a Tuesday night, which was rearranged because of international games. And so we've got Bolton, who are obviously in the hunt for promotion. Then we go to Charlton, who have got nothing to play for, but their manager has turned them around and they're doing all right. And then we've got Leighton Orient, who've got nothing to play for as well, at home on the last day of the season. And I've got a sneaking feeling that by the time we get to the last game, I think we might actually be safe. But I think that might be just because of the other teams more than anything else. But that could come back to bite me on the arse, because there's going to be a point in time where these teams below us are actually going to pick up some results, Dan.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm going to be very positive here. Mike's going to just think I've gone completely raving nuts. But we could be mathematically safe on Tuesday. Right, if we skank a point at Bolton, if Cheltenham lose against Burton and Wickham win at Port Vale, it's all done, mate.
Yeah, and if we win every other game for the time, we'll win the Champions League, Dan. So, you know, anything can happen, really, can't
it? So let's just repeat that again. We draw.
We need a
and
point.
The other teams lose.
Well, Burton plays Cheltenham, don't they? So, yeah, so we need draw, Cheltenham to. No, we need Cheltenham to lose. And then we need Port Vale to lose. And we
have to put
that
on Twitter because I don't remember it. But yeah, it's. Yeah. I could, yeah.
If doing a lot of work in that, I'll be honest. But I just thought,
yeah. Dan, can you hold up the label of that wine? Because I'm going to go and get a bottle of that, because that sounds like some real happy juice you've got there.
I'm onto the third glass, I'll be honest with you.
So, yeah, Chris, what's your thoughts going into the last few games?
My glass is not as half full as Dan's. I don't see us getting anything at Bolton. And sorry, Dan, I don't see us getting anything at Charlton either. So, will we be safe against Leighton Orient? To me, I'm relying on the others being utterly dreadful, frankly, and keeping us up by default. If that gap is down to 3 points by the time we play Orient, and that's very possible because it only needs Cheltenham have got an extra game compared to us by the time we get to last day. If they just get a win and a draw from the next three they've got, they'd be within touching distance. Port Vale, if they can win one of the next two, and they've got Wickham next, who frankly were dreadful against us for a lot of that game. I could see Vale beating them. Then that brings the gap down to 3 points. If the gap's 3 points because of our goal difference, there's pressure, isn't there? There's real pressure on our players. And that last day, I can't remember the last time.
Hold on, Chris.
I felt this kind of pressure.
Cheltenham need two wins, Chris. A quite important detail. They're 8 points behind us, right? If they're going to get to 5 points, then they need two wins. Now, they might get them, but the form tells us that they're not in good form. They're not in good form at the moment. They've won 10 games out of 42. It would be impressive if they got 2 wins out of 3.
But Dan, it doesn't need them to pass us as well, does it? If Burton also get us, if Burton and Vale get us, that's enough.
Well,
to put
Burton
us in the
play Cheltenham, so you know.
So all right, so Burton win that. Forget Cheltenham. Burton beat Cheltenham. That brings them level with us, above us on goal difference. Vale win one game, they're within 3 points, and then we go into that last game sweating.
That's gone too quick because you've got Burton playing Cheltenham, so they're both not going to win that game, right?
No, I'm writing them off. That's fine. I'm saying it doesn't matter.
But then they've got to play Lincoln.
Don't all need to pass, do they?
But Lincoln and then Peterborough and then Stevenage. So it's really funny. You've got like the glass half full, Dan, and Chris, who's often the pessimist, is the dev. I don't think the glass has got even a drop of wine in it, to be honest.
I'm often more optimistic than some
you
of
worry.
You.
You're a warrior, though.
I'm a warrior, and I can see us going into that Orient game having to potentially needing something. I'm just dreading that scenario. We're all looking at our phones. It's the 80th minute. We're still 0-0, and then the news comes through that Port Vale have just scored at Stevenage or something. And at that point, it's you know,
and I don't trust this team.
That's exactly what I said on my Twitter rant.
Yeah, you've got like the game against Barnsley, the Perry penalty, the Flanagan sending off. We've got some like you know Morosi making a mistake. This team doesn't fill me with confidence.
Can I flag up one other thing of interest? Okay. And this may be important come the final day of the season. Port Vale play Cambridge on the final day of the season. Now, Cambridge have still got 3 games to play, and of course they're above us in the table, but only on goal difference. So it's not beyond the realms that we, you know, Cambridge could be in this, right? If they have a poor run in the next week as well. So I don't completely forget Cambridge. I don't expect them to go down, but I wouldn't think that all the teams above us are home and hose. They're not quite. And that Port Vale Cambridge game looks really interesting to me. And of course, Cambridge had to win on the last day of the season last year to stay up. So they've been in this position before.
I'm also going with the theory that I can make myself look like an idiot on this podcast because we could go and beat Bolton tomorrow on Tuesday and be safe. So I'd love that. I'd love this podcast to go out with me looking like a complete moron because I've got all this angst and we're safe with 2 to play. That's fine by me.
Chris, don't be too harsh on yourself. But can I be clear as well? I'm not predicting that we're going to go and play Bolton off the pitch. I don't want to misconstrue it. I'm just saying we've got, Derby away, Derby at home. We've got this thing, but Portsmouth away, of producing better performances in games where no one gives us a cat and owls chance. So, I'm keeping everything crossed. Pass me the bottle.
Yeah, so fingers crossed we can get something. It's going to be a nervy end to the season. Unless Dan's scenario plays out on Tuesday night, and then we'll be fine. So, yeah, I think let's call it to a call there and a close there, sorry. Any final thoughts, guys?
Is it
good? Good luck to anybody going on Tuesday to Bolton. Well done if you go in there. Bloody hell.
Yeah, we'll fingers crossed.
My final thought is, may as well ignore the town matches for the end of the season and just go into the pub and watch soccer Saturday and check out the Burton and the Port Vale and the Cheltenham results and just watch them instead because it's I think it has far more bearing on what we do than what we do on the pitch probably.
Ollie, can you get over to Mike? We need all sharp implements out of the kitchen. I fear for the
Max's wife.
Yeah, bring a bottle of wine, you'll be fine.
Hold on a minute, Mike. So you're in the London Marathon next Sunday, so you're in the South East. On Saturday,
I'm going to Cheltenham. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good.
That's all part of it.
We can enjoy it together.
It's exactly. So I can run thinking about when we got relegated. You know, that would be a good thing to do on Sunday, won't it? Yeah. Oh, so God. They've got to get a result there. So I can't do 26 miles on a downer.
Saturday afternoon before a London Marathon, you should surely be relaxing. No stress. Getting yourself ready for quite a big event in your life. Instead, you're going to go and put yourself through 90 minutes of Shrewsbury Town when there's quite a lot at stake. Good luck.
Yeah, it's suboptimal preparation, let's call it. But you've got to be there for the cause, haven't you? So
I had considered that. Game, you'll feel like starting the marathon straight away.
Yeah, sub 2 hours I'll do if we win that and we stay up. Yeah. I'll be flying on Sunday. Yeah, but I'm not expecting it. Let's be honest. It's quite fortuitous that it came up on the London Marathon weekend. We thought it was good because I'm running it for Glyn. Glyn would have definitely been at Cheltenham. So it feels like a real sort of tribute weekend for Glyn. We're getting the football in and a stupidly long run. So it's a pretty perfect sort of way to round it off, I think.
And I know a few of the old boys you'd have played football with 15 years or so ago, Mike, are they going to be there as well? I know Phil Thomas, for example, a regular listener to this pod, will be there. Let's have that narrative. We'll stay up on Saturday at Charlton.
And well done for mentioning that, actually, Dan, because the following weekend, after the it's Lincoln at home, isn't it? The final game of the season. Just to let people know, there is a is late morning, whatever it is. I've given up. I don't even know we're playing anymore. There is a football match afterwards. I think it kicks about 4 o'clock, where myself and a few of the guys we used to play with for the away supporters, Dan is playing. He's probably going to be one of our better players. He still plays. Most of us have given up by now. So we are playing on the pitch behind the north stand, south stand. I get it right in a minute. Beyond the south stand, it's the old away supporters vets that I used to play with versus the current away supporters. It's a charity match for the foundation. It's the sort of annual sort of tribute match to Glyn that we've set up. So if anybody's still knocking around the stadium afterwards, please head over there, support us. There'll be buckets for collections, I think. You can watch some old, out of shape footballers play probably marginally worse than the actual town team, but it'll be a little bit more fun, I think. So anybody wants to come and have a look, we're all going to be over there having a nice end to the season.
Nice place to leave it. So, yeah, let's see where we are and when we come back in a few weeks' time. At least it won't take long. It's not long until the end of the season now, 2 weeks. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And, we'll be back again, either a League One side or a League Two side, I guess. And then we'll review this season, which is going to be quite painful. So, yeah, look forward to that. And we'll be back again soon. Thanks for listening.
Cheers, fellas.
Times have changed. That's Nolan! It's bitter from John Nolan! Shrewsbury Town, the team who've stood tall amongst giants in League One this season, are making their presence felt again. And their star man, John Nolan, has scored a beauty!